Blog Talk Radio.
Thursday, June 1st, 2017. This is the PW Torch Livecast Impact Post Show. I am PWTorch.com's Mike McMahon with PWTorch.com's Andrew Socek. Andrew, how are you tonight?
Mike, I'm doing good, though. I'm a little nervous about what you got to say about this opening segment.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to it. I don't know. I mean, I guess first off, what was your overall take on the show? I mean, it was sort of a... It was a thumbs-in-the-middle show for me, I'd say. You know, I thought that the action in the ring was pretty good. I thought the main event was pretty good. The matches, on the whole, weren't the problem here. There were a lot of decisions from a booking standpoint that just had me scratching my head and drove me a little bit crazy. But what was your overall take on this show?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think there's been like 4 or 5 weeks in a row where I would have given the thumbs up to Impact. It seems some of their strange booking decisions are starting to catch up to them. I was probably more frustrated than enjoying the overall show, I would say.
Yeah, that's sort of where I was too. And let's get to it. Let's run down the show and we'll talk about it with you guys in a little bit, at 515-605-9345. Again, that number is 515-605-9345. And remember, if you want to get in the caller queue, all you got to do is hit the number 1 once you're on hold, and that'll put you in line to get on the air. But Andrew, let's start running through the show here. They started with a promo segment, which is, I think, 2 weeks in a row now that they've done this, and it's a little different than what they had been doing leading up to that. They've been starting the show with some matches for the last several weeks, and then the last went back to a promo segment, very WWE-ish, and did the thing here tonight. I'm not a big fan of that overall concept. You know, I thought that it was differentiating them to start the show with a match, which is something that at least their main competition, WWE, doesn't really do. So I wasn't a big fan of them going back to the whole let's start the show with these big long promo segments. But also, I thought the booking here was just ridiculous. You had EC3 come out and basically celebrate being the number one contender for the Impact World title and go on a Slammiversary. He gets interrupted by Alberto El Patron, who never gets to say anything before the entire power structure. I'm not sure what else to call him. The entire power structure in Impact ends up coming out on the stage. You get Karen Jarrett, you get Bruce Pritchard, you got Dutch Mantel, and Tyrus, of course, is out there as well. And they announced that, or Bruce Pritchard took the mic and told EC3 that he told them there was going to be consequences for attacking him a couple of weeks ago. And then just, it seemed like on a whim, booked a main event match for this show, which was El Patron versus EC3 in a cage. It was for the GFW world title, and it was for the number one contender spot in the title shot at Slammiversary. A couple of issues I have here. First of all, you build up this number one contender triple threat match last week. You go off the air with EC3 celebrating, winning that match. You're not on the air for 8 minutes the following week, and you've completely undone that. You just completely disregarded it, which means why should anybody care about anything that has any stipulation ever again when 8 minutes into the next show, you can just disregard it and go in a different direction? That's number one. Number two, and this is more of a pet peeve than anything else, because WWE does this all the time, where they book main events after the show already goes on the air. But I'm not a fan of the, hey, we went on the air without a main event, but now we have one. Especially with Impact, when, in terms of the narrative structure, I mean, you have a week. Okay, EC3 was the number one contender in their storytelling world a week ago. He did it a week ago. And that took those three people almost a full week to decide what they were going to do? I mean, I think it just makes the authority figures, and there's a lot of them here, look ridiculous that it took you that long to come up with a consequence for EC3 and that you went into a show technically without a main event. I think it's a big mistake erasing a stipulation as quickly as they did, and then also the whole idea of announcing this on the air as opposed to even announcing it, you know, Monday or Tuesday on the website and then sort of building it up a little bit, at least advertising it. And it's sort of a reversal of some of the things they had done really well for several weeks and for several months now, which is building up their main events and advertising them well. What were your overall thoughts on this opening promo segment, both in terms of, you know, starting the show with the promo and then also the content of this promo in particular?
Yes, it was very goofy, and you made some great points there, how they just kind of screwed EC3 over. Like, that angle has been so bad. You know, EC3 attacked Bruce Pritchard, and then the following week he said there's going to be an investigation. Why did there need to be an investigation? That wasn't touched upon at all tonight. EC3 didn't talk about being screwed over, really. Yeah, exactly, yeah. And just that group is so goofy looking. It's like very Scooby-Doo-ish. They come out. It's Karen Jarrett, Bruce Pritchard, Tyrus, and Dutch Mantel. Like, that is not a good look. I mean, I'm writing this for – I made a note for the hit list, but in WWE, I can't stand Stephanie McMahon, Triple H's characters, but they look legitimate when they come out. Like, these four just look like goofballs. It just looks really low rent. Why I don't get why they're not letting El Patron talk. That's probably, you know, he's probably one of the best talkers in the company. And he just looked bad, like kind of backing down to those singers. Because they, like, you know, EC3 hit behind them in like a comedy spot, and they stood, the singers like had their arms crossed and were trying to fight back smiles, and like Patron didn't just like bust through him and try to break his arm. So a really bad opening segment. And yeah, it's I was really high when the show opened with like LAX a few weeks ago and all these different matches, but this was a pretty bad way to start the show.
They went to a commercial break here and then came back with Eli Drake against Moose for the Impact Grand Championship. This was a decent match. They, of course, go three rounds, as most of these matches tend to do. Moose won with a decision. He lost round one, won rounds two and rounds three. And I thought this was an interesting match because this is probably the first time where you could say that the decision was a little controversial. Just watching, I guess, the match, I at the end of the third round, I could have seen them going in either direction, either having Moose retain, or I thought that there was enough there that Eli Drake, they may have been setting up him to win the title by decision. But I thought this was a pretty good match. You know, the Impact Grand Championship gimmick, I'm not sure that there's a lot of legs there. We've talked about that. But I thought this was pretty good for what it was. And to me, this doesn't seem to be the end. You know, this seems to be setting up something more with Eli Drake, Moose, and probably Chris Adonis.
Yeah, it does. You're probably a little higher on this match than I was. The Grand Championship, it's just not finding its footing for me, and we've talked about that. It just lacks intensity. Like, if you're going to do it differently. But so working like a regular style match just doesn't feel right. I think at the end of the second round, Eli Drake went for a figure four leg lock, and there was literally 2 seconds left.
Yeah.
It's like, what was the point of that? What is the point of wrestling a regular match? I just want to see more intensity. I want to see, more MMA-like moves. Just whatever they're doing is just, it just kind of kills momentum for the matches for me.
My biggest issue with this match was, you know, surprise, surprise, the commentary. Because this is where,
yeah.
And it was just Josh Matthews and Pope on commentary tonight, but this is really where, because it was the first time that Matthews really had a chance to speak with the first segment of the show being a promo segment, but this is really where he was in full self-promotion mode and putting over his own storyline and putting over himself and putting over his partner, Scott Steiner. it's just distracting, you know, and I feel like a broken record here because we're complaining about the same things every week, but I thought that this is a really good example of bad commentary straight out distracting from a match, because there was a match going on in the ring and the announcers were not talking. There were large stretches of this match where the announcers were not talking about what was going on at the ring whatsoever. They were too busy talking about Josh Matthews, and Josh was too busy talking about himself. To me, it's just a prime example of what's wrong with having your announce team be one of your main storylines.
Yeah, the past couple weeks, I thought Josh Matthews wasn't as bad as prior weeks. He went back to being really bad tonight. It's so weird that the most focused on story, the one with the most storyline hype and talk, is that tag match at Slammiversary. And it's not even close. None of the other big matches are being talked about a fraction as much. Because Matthews keeps talking about it, and they go to all these different backstage segments talking about it. But yeah, he really brought the show down tonight.
Do you think, that being said, do you think it was a mistake to not have Scott Steiner on the show here in some way, shape, or form, considering his return last week?
Yes, absolutely. I think I emailed you before the show, but that was like the thing I was looking most forward to, is just hearing him on the mic again. And just shooting off about how ridiculous this is or whatever he's going to do. Yeah, I would have put him on the show as opposed to, I mean, if they could have just said, you know, tune down what you're going to say. We'll give you a couple skits and just call the matches how they are. But obviously that didn't happen.
Yeah, or, you know, I think it's good in some way that they've kept some guys off TV for a week here or a week there, instead of forcing everybody on the show every week. But I thought this was a good opportunity for, like you said, Scott Steiner to come out and, first of all, say why he's back. You know, what sort of connection does Scott Steiner have with Josh Matthews? Really none. I don't think they crossed paths in WWE at all. You know, Josh Matthews was not with Impact the last time Scott Steiner was there. So what's the connection? You know, some sort of explanation. Even if it was just, you know, something as simple as a 45-second little backstage interview with Mackenzie Mitchell, just something. I thought it was a missed opportunity in considering the impact, you know, no pun intended, that they had him make last week with Joseph Park and Jeremy Borash literally running out of the building when he came out. They were really building him up as a psychopath and this monster. Why not have him do something on the show this week? It sort of throws some cold water, I think, on what was a pretty hot return a week ago.
Yeah, I agree. That we talked about that last week, but that played out a lot better than I imagined it was going to. I had seen the photo of Scott Steiner in the arena a few weeks ago and just kind of laughed, thinking how awful it was going to be. I'm really hoping I haven't looked at the spoilers for this, so I'm hoping he's in India for the tapings. Otherwise, that's going to be a huge mess on their end.
Yeah, I haven't looked either. I've been purposely trying to avoid them. But, yeah, I agree. Because these are the last four episodes. I mean, they're taping four episodes leading up to Slammiversary. So if they didn't bring Scott Steiner to India, you will not have him on any show leading up to Slammiversary, with the exception of the one appearance he made. So it'll be interesting to see if they did end up bringing him on that trip. I think it would have been wise to. It's another question about whether or not they, you know, could have gotten him over there, number one, or if they even wanted to bring him over there, if they were going with a little bit of a shorter roster, considering what I'm assuming is much more in travel costs. Although, you know, you don't know what Sony 6 is picking up for travel and production costs on this trip either. So anyway, after that, actually, you know what, let's go to our first break, because it's 10:15. So let's go to our first break. We're about an hour through in terms of running down the show. So we'll come back and run down the second hour right after this, and also get to your phone calls at 515-605-9342011. Andrew will have the answer to that question. We'll have more of our reaction to this week's Impact, and then your calls at 515-605-9345. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast Impact Post Show.
If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com.
All right, back here in the PW Torch Livecast Impact Post Show, Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek with you. Andrew, what match did Jeff Jarrett defeat Kurt Angle in at Lockdown 2011?
That was the Ultra Male Rules match, 2 out of 3 falls. I had completely forgotten that existed, but yeah, I looked that up today. This was during Jeff Jarrett's, I believe, his MMA gimmick, which actually was ridiculous, but maybe my favorite form of Jeff Jarrett in TNA over the past few years. It was actually kind of fun for a bit.
I really tried to hold back my laughter there for a couple of reasons. I knew it was coming because I'm reading your email with the questions, but Ultra Male Rules just is very funny to me. And then the Jeff Jarrett, the words Jeff Jarrett and MMA gimmick being used in the same sentence is also quite funny to me. you know what? That's another interesting point. Speaking of Jeff Jarrett, I mean, we haven't seen him on the show at all. And look, I'm not advocating and saying that they need more authority figures in the show because they've got 3 of them right now. But are you surprised that he has not made an appearance in some way, shape, or form and isn't involved in the storytelling on a week-to-week basis?
I am pretty surprised. Yeah, he was on the poster or the image for the India tour they showed on. I don't know if he's going to show up there even, so I don't know why they put him on there. But, yeah, I mean, the biggest criticism of TNA during its first, 5 to 8 years was that it was Jeff Jarrett's promotion. He couldn't help but put himself on TV every week, and he was beating guys like DDP and Kevin Nash and whoever came into the company. So maybe he's gotten control of his ego, or I don't know what it is, but I am surprised, though. As we've talked about before, too, I would take him easily over the 3 people that have on TV right now, though I don't want to see him every week either.
Yeah, no, I agree. I do think it's interesting, though, and maybe he's become a little more self-aware of the perception the last time. And it at this point, it seems to me like a cognizant effort to keep himself off television, because there were definitely opportunities where he could have brought himself back on TV, especially with some of the stuff involving his wife. You know, there were some opportunities there, and they didn't do it. I think he'll end up back on the show at some point. But I think he's smart to have it be a little bit.
Yeah, I could see that. He'll show up eventually, I would say.
Yeah. All right, well, back to this week's episode. Again, you can give us a call at 515-605-9345. Just make sure you hit the number 1 on your phone. That'll put you in the caller queue. They went to, after the Grand Championship match, Impact Grand Championship match, they had a backstage segment where Rosemary was basically telling Allie that she was there to protect her because she needed protection. And then Allie wrestled Amber Nova after a break. Allie won this match in about 3 minutes. And this match was just kind of there. There wasn't really much to it. Allie won the match. She celebrated with Braxton Sutter. She even hugged Amber Nova after the match, who was booked, by the way, as coming from the garage. That was where she was from, Amber Nova. It is what it was. I mean, it was sort of some filler time here. I think the Allie character seemed like it was a lot more over a few months ago. And I don't know if it's people just growing tired of it or what, but it definitely felt like there was a lot more people behind her back in probably February or March than there is now. And one of my reactions tonight, just sort of watching her mannerisms on the ring entrance with Braxton Sutter, watching her in the ring, you know, I think at one point she had a waist lock or something, you know, maybe 15 seconds into the match, and was like, oh, I did it, I did it. She was yelling at Braxton Sutter. You know, it seems to be morphing into almost like a Eugene-type character. And I mean, that's what it reminded me of. It was like, this is like a female version of Eugene almost. The crowd was really behind her, though, a few months ago, and now, you know, they seem to really be pushing the she has no clue what she's doing button really, really hard. And I don't know if maybe that's why some people are turned off to the character a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, for last year, I would say Allie was one of the rookies of the year in professional wrestling. She came out of nowhere. She was a blast. The crowd loved her. And now she reminds me of Bayley in WWE, how they had something really good and it's
great
not
comparison.
Working anymore. But yeah.
Yeah, that's a great comparison, yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't know this actually until like a week or two ago. I think Jason Powell had wrote it on his site, but Braxton Sutter and Allie are married in real life, but I don't think they have a lot of chemistry on air. I don't know if it's just their characters, but I don't think his addition to her act has really done her any favors. And of course, Maria leaving the company and never getting that payoff has hurt as well. But I'm hoping they can save her character get it going again. But yeah, it's pretty flat right now.
Yeah. You know, I think it's a good point you brought up with the comparison to Bayley, but also the fact that there was never really any resolution to that Maria storyline because they left between tapings. You know, that's what they were really building to. And that's really when people were behind her the most. So you almost have to wonder, were people really behind Allie, or was Maria just a really good heel and people were behind anybody that was going to be opposite Maria? it's interesting though, because she's definitely cooled off, I would say, big time, in a big way these last few months. There, they show Joseph Park and Jeremy Borash arriving at the Impact Zone. They showed up on a golf cart. Then they went to the finals of the GFW Tag Team Championship Tournament. LAX beat the Veterans of War to win the titles. So they are now dual champions. They are now the GFW Tag Team Champions and the Impact Tag Team Champions. So I assume this unifies the titles. We get rid of a championship here, but who knows, because they never really said for sure. What were your thoughts on this match here with LAX winning the GFW Tag Team Championships?
This is one of those matches where there's something kind of silly and I can't get over it, and it ruins the match for me. It's the fact that it was no DQ and yet LAX is going out of their way for the ref to not see them interfere. There's no point to that. If they wanted to, all of them could have just jumped the Veterans of War from the opening moments and nothing could have happened. They made the right call. I think Veterans of War, I've complained about them in the past. LAX is just, it's a much cooler act. So I think it's good to go with them. I'm sure in the end, via Veterans of War are going to get their revenge. But for now, it was fine. I guess I couldn't get over that initial nonsense.
Yeah, similar to you, I had an issue with the whole no DQ thing too. Not only was, you know, why is LAX going out of their way to hide their interference, it's a no DQ match. Why was it a no DQ match? I'm not sure they explain why it was all of a sudden a no DQ match. And, you know, it goes back to the first segment where the booking made the people in charge look like idiots. Well, if the people in charge are okay allowing one team to come to the ring with three people in their corner for a no DQ match, how smart are they? You know, how smart are the people in charge when they go, okay, we're going to make this a no DQ match, even though one of these teams comes out with three more people in their corner and obvious interference all over the place, and none of the three people in charge have a problem with this? I mean, it just goes back to making logical sense. And this was twice, I thought, where they made the people in charge within an hour, because this match was at the 9 p.m. mark. This was twice within an hour where I thought they made the authority figures, the people in charge of the company, look really, really stupid, because there was no reason for this. I mean, unless I'm missing something here, I don't know why this was a DQ match. I don't know if they explained why this was a no DQ match. It was because it was, for some reason. But at the same time, nobody was banned from ringside. It was a no DQ match. It was basically 5-on-2. And no one really said why it was ever booked as essentially a 5-on-2 match. That bothered me quite a bit. You know, just another booking decision that I thought made absolutely no sense on this show.
It was also like kind of Vince Russo-esque in the fact that, one, that the gimmick match didn't need to be there. But then, two, there were two gimmick matches on the show, and both of them just happened out of nowhere. At the beginning of the show, like you said, Bruce Pritchard announced it's got a cage match, so good thing they had a cage in the arena that night.
So
two of the, I don't know, five matches on the show, that's kind of overdoing it quite a bit.
Yeah, that's another good point. Why was the main event a cage match? Where was there interference that needed to be prevented, or who was trying to run away that needed to be locked into a cage? I mean, think about the absurdity of this. 20 years ago, or maybe 30 years ago at this point, the cage was either meant to keep people in or to keep other people out. And here you had a situation where neither guy has anyone interfering for them on their behalf. You know, EC3 doesn't have a bodyguard with him. El Patron doesn't have a manager. It's two singles, one-on-one guys. And they set up a cage match after El Patron was charging EC3 to fight him in the ring. Nobody was running away, and they decided we need to lock these guys in a cage for no reason. It was just to have a cage match in the main event. It's hot-shotting, which, like you said, is very Vince Russo-esque, but it's just the booking on this show really, really made no sense to me on a number of different levels. Although I will say this. Oh, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, they're getting into a really bad habit lately of giving away really big matches. Like, if you think of their entire roster, EC3 and El Patron, even though we've seen it before, that's one of the top five matches that they can deliver. And they didn't even bother to book it a week out. So that's, you know, when you give away something that big, I mean, what are you going to put in its place? You could go to a gimmick, but then they also did that tonight. So they're just they're hurting their long-term potential of building up intriguing feuds.
Yeah, exactly. And especially on a night like tonight where you're up against some stuff. You know, I would think most season finales are over. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, Thursday dramas, I guess, on TV. That, you know, season finales on network TV have all wrapped up, I believe. But, you know, you've got game one of the NBA Finals tonight. That's certainly going to draw some eyeballs. I mean, you look at what WWE did before the Memorial Day Raw, where they announced two matches a week in advance, trying to make sure people watch the show. Now, it didn't work. They had their lowest rating ever, I think, this week. But still, you know, they looked ahead and they said, okay, next week's going to be a challenge. It's a holiday week. Let's announce something in advance. Impact have been doing that most weeks anyway. And here they are against some pretty stiff competition in game one of the NBA Finals. They don't announce anything in advance, and they book a cage match main event. You know, maybe the cage match makes sense if you say, okay, we're up against some things here, in particular game one of the NBA Finals. Well, book it in advance. Announce it on your website so the people actually know about it as opposed to when the show starts.
Yeah, just in general, it was a very off night. I don't know if it was just because it was the last night of those tapings and they were having trouble coming up with something, but they made a few kind of like obviously glaring mistakes that made it seem very sloppy.
All right, we got to hit our next commercial break, and then we'll come back and we'll finish wrapping up this show and then talk about it with you guys at 515-605-9345. Our second trivia question this week: what was Alex Shelley's nickname when he first joined Impact Wrestling? I guess then it was TNA. But what was Alex Shelley's nickname when he first joined TNA? Well, the answer to that question, your phone calls, and Andrew and I will finish wrapping up this week's episode of Impact right after the break. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast Impact Post Show.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch Livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com. covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com.
All right, back here in the PW Torch Livecast Impact post show. Andrew, what was Alex Shelley's nickname when he first joined TNA?
He had one of the worst nicknames in wrestling history. He was Baby Bear, Alex Shelley. And the reason why he was Baby Bear is because there was an old interviewer in the company named Goldilocks, and then they started to turn her into a manager, and I don't know if she was trying to like develop a Three Bears stable, but she had Alex Shelley and Abyss. Shelley was Baby Bear, and I think he didn't get along well with Goldilocks. He didn't like what he was doing. He left the company, went to ROH, and eventually came back and had a more successful run.
That's right. You know, I had forgotten about that. I was going to say, I read that earlier today, and I was reading it when I was got your email, and I goes, I don't even remember that. I completely forgotten about that. Yeah, I think he's done all right for himself, though.
Yeah, I think, you know, if I had a list of biggest missed opportunities, I mean, obviously there's AJ and Joe up there, but I think there was a time when Shelley could have really been something with them. They were doing a little angle with him and Mick Foley and kind of dropped it. So, I don't know. I wouldn't mind seeing him come back someday.
Yeah, 100%. Me too. After the LAX match, Jeremy Borash and Joseph Park were backstage. They were with Mackenzie Mitchell, and they were talking about Scott Steiner returning to be Josh Matthews' partner. Borash said he never wanted to be in the ring. He wanted to be an announcer since he was a kid, and he told Joseph Park that getting in the ring wasn't happening. He wasn't going to do it, but Park insisted. He said they were going to be ready, and they were going to be ready because they were going to train. And then Jeremy Borash asked Joseph Park if he lost his damn mind. And the segment ended. You know, it's one of those things where we sort of just talked about not having Scott Steiner on the show, and I don't know if they feel like they don't have to because you've got someone on the announce table who's constantly talking about this match because they're going to be involved in it. But I don't know. This backstage interaction felt very weird to me. I mean, I don't see them not going with this match at Slammiversary, so I just don't know why they're playing up the Jeremy Borash doesn't want to do this angle. It's just, to me, it's a weird layer that doesn't really need to be there.
At this point, it's just, I mean, the whole thing is stupid, but it's continually getting stupider. Because, I mean, Jeremy, everybody knows Joseph Parks is Abyss. It's been said on air. So why would not Jeremy Borash not just say, like, I can't have you. I need Abyss at this point.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where they're headed, but it's just like, it's just, I don't know. It just stands out to me. Like, this is silly. Like, you just have to turn your brain off and wonder how much longer it's going to go on.
From there, Low-Key defended the X Division Championship against Andrew Everett. This match went about 13 minutes. Sanjay Dutt was on color commentary here, too. I thought this was the best segment of the show. Not only was it a pretty good match, but I thought Sanjay was good on commentary, and they planted some obvious seeds for a Low-Key Sanjay Dutt match, and it sounds like that's going to take place at one of the India tapings, in which case I would not be at all surprised if Sanjay Dutt wins the X Division Championship, considering he's, I guess you could consider him the hometown guy. I think his parents are from India, so I don't think he is. I think his parents are. But either way, it definitely seems like they're heading towards a match with Low-Key and Sanjay Dutt. Low-Key had come up to Sanjay Dutt a couple of times during the match and said something to the effect of, you know, you never learn your lesson, or why don't you ever learn your lesson? I think Low-Key went up to Sanjay and said something after the match as well. The announcers were playing up how Low-Key had injured Sanjay's eye, and Matthews was wondering whether or not it was intentional. You know, I thought everything about this was good. I thought the commentary was good because they were talking about, for the most part, I think at one point Josh Matthews talked about how he used to, you know, wrestle like the guys in the X Division or something. But for the most part, they kept the focus on Low-Key and Sanjay Dutt. But at the same time, I didn't think they hurt Andrew Everett too much, because he still looked pretty strong in this match. And this is a pretty good example of how, you know, the last two times Andrew Everett's been in the ring with Loki, he's lost. He lost the Ultimate X match with Trevor Lee, and then he lost the singles match tonight. But I don't think it's done him much harm, even though they're investing in Loki and putting him over and giving him wins. And I thought the interaction with Sanjay Dutt to plant some seeds to set up for what I'm sure are going to be some matches, or at least one match over these India tapings. Everything about this segment I thought was good and was the best segment of the night for me.
Yeah, completely agree. Yeah, for me, it was easily the best segment. Yeah, just a few things. Sanjay Dutt, I thought he was pretty strong on commentary. It just made me think, like, oh, man, like, I would take him over Josh Matthews in a second. You know, he provided insight. He's got a good voice for it. What kind of struck me, and maybe this is just me, but he sounded like, I don't know the right word, but he just complained again about, like, whether Loki did it on purpose. Like, I don't get that. Of course, like, shouldn't he be trying to kick you in the face on purpose? So him going back to that is kind of confusing for me. Otherwise, yeah, I thought this was strong. And like you said, I don't think Andrew Everett lost anything. If they want to, there's a story in there. I mean, they put over Loki strong. He's like 37. He's been there for, you know, on and off for 15 years. Andrew Everett is like 24. So, you know, you can just chalk that up to he's a rookie. He's still growing. Eventually he's going to get better. Eventually he's going to be able to topple Loki or whoever they want to put in his place. So, yeah, just another strong match. And again, they blew away anything going on in the cruiserweight division. So, yeah, just a strong segment overall.
What do you think of Andrew Everett's look? You know, he's obviously incredibly...
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's athletically, he's amazing. But, I don't dislike Andrew Everett. I think he's really good. But,
yeah.
There's something about his look. I don't know if it's the hair, if it's the thing on his neck. I mean, he doesn't have a big muscular build, but I don't think he has to. But maybe, I don't know if it's a change in ring attire that maybe something needs to happen there, but there seems to be something lacking there for me that is preventing him maybe from really getting to the next level.
Yeah, so cheap plug PW Podcast briefly. On Xbox 12360, he had Jeff Cobb on, who's Matanza from Lucha Underground, and they talked about the importance of being in good connection with the production team and the designers. Like, you know, they'll get you a good outfit, because originally Matanza had something that looked more Braun Strowman-esque that probably wouldn't have worked for him. So it just got me thinking during this match, like, Andrew Everett needs somebody to get him new trunks. He probably needs a haircut. He's going bald. It's not a great look. There's something they can make work. He's a very talented guy, but yeah, he needs a wrestling makeover.
Yeah. You know, it's almost like he's got the long hair, but it's not wet like you usually see it. It's kind of dry, and he just looks real disheveled almost. And, you know, he's not a big muscular guy. And again, he doesn't have to be, but I don't know if the traditional, you know, wrestling trunks, shows him in the best light. I'm not a fan of, I don't know what the thing is that he's wearing on his neck. It's got, you know, some type of collar or something on in his neck, which just looks a little weird to me. But, you know, I agree. I mean, there needs to be something done there just to make him look cooler. He doesn't look cool right now. You know, to me, he just looks he looks like a guy that might be, you know, hanging out in front of a convenience store or something. He just looks like a regular schmo from, like, you know, from any town, you know, in the country. He doesn't look like a star. You know, something needs to be done with his look to, I think, really make him stand out and look like a star.
Yes, and I think that really stood out tonight just because of Loki. I mean, Loki looks like a star. He looks like a badass. Yeah. He makes the suit work, even though that's kind of a weird thing to wear in a match. But, yeah, he just has that confidence. And Andrew Everett, he needs something. I'm no fashion expert, but he does need some sort of look overhaul.
I mean, it's kind of funny because at one point my wife walked in and, you know, we're both fans of Kevin Smith in his, especially his early movies. But I'm a listener of his podcast now. And, you know, she walked in and looked quickly, and she goes, "That guy looks like it's Jason Mewes turned into a wrestler." And that's sort of what he looks like, you know, with the long hair. He sort of just looks like he doesn't look like a superstar. You see him walking through the airport, you'd have no idea that he was a wrestler. You know, he could just be some kid with long hair walking through the airport. You know, there doesn't seem to be anything special about the way he looks.
It's important. It's a small thing, but definitely help take him to that next level.
And he's done well. He's done well with with where he is now. You know, I think there's more there though, and with, like you said, a wrestling makeover or some type of look change, I think it could help get him there. After that, they went to they had been showing. I caught myself. I almost said Hornswoggle. They had shown Swoggle at ringside a couple of times throughout the course of the show. And then all of a sudden they cut back to ringside. Josh Matthews and Pope were talking about the main event. Swoggle was behind them at this point. You could see him in the camera shot. And he was attacked from behind by Rockstar Spud, who had said he was going to show up and get his revenge. And Rockstar Spud beat up Swoggle around the ringside area in the crowd, dragged him inside the barricade, went under the ring, grabbed the hammer, and then just beat the crap out of Swoggle with the hammer. Swoggle was bleeding at the end of this, looking like he had a cut above his eye, but he was bleeding. He was selling leg injuries after Rockstar Spud beat him up with the hammer, beat up his legs with a hammer. And, you know, I don't know where they're going here, but I thought that there was some intensity to this segment, which was refreshing. I don't really know what I think of it yet, and I think part of that is I don't know where they're going with it.
Yeah, I didn't like this. This was an easy way to turn Rockstar Spud into a silly, goofy, fun-loving underdog who gets back in the ring, but he was dressed all in black, like he's a bad guy, and he like violently beat Swoggle with a hammer. It's just way too much. Like, if he's going to be a good guy, he should have just, attacked him in a silly way or pants him again. I don't know what he would have done, but like nearly killing him with a hammer, I thought was way too far, and I got a good kick out of one of the refs just trying to stop him, and he goes, "Knock it off." Like, like a high school teacher would say, just knock it off. Like, he's killing a man with a hammer. So the whole thing just was way too bad for me, or weird.
Yeah, there was a couple things about this too, one of which had to do with the segment and one of which had nothing to do with the actual segment at all, but still bothered me. The first one, at one point you've got all these officials, security guards and referees are all standing there, and they're watching Rockstar Spud just beat the crap out of Swagger with a hammer. And they're all, you know, there's five of them, six of them. They'd made a circle around the situation. And they're all yelling for him to stop. But no one thought, like, hey, there's six of us. We could probably just grab this guy and make him stop. That looked a little weird to me. And then the second thing that is probably, I'll admit, being a little nitpicky, but when it happened, it just made me groan out loud. They cut after the low-key match, after the X Division title match, they cut to a video. It was a Make Impact Great Again video. They came back. It couldn't have been more than 20 seconds. It was a short one. It couldn't have been more than 15 or 20 seconds. And then, boom, we're back in the arena. Here we are at ringside. Josh Matthews, you can see Swoggle in the background. And the cage is set up for the main event. So you're telling me that it took 15 seconds for them to set up a cage? it looked out of place to me. Like, they weren't away from the show long enough to come back and have a cage set up. I know it's taped. I get that. But it's like the whole narrative structure of, hey, we've got the show. You know, they don't go out of their way to say that they're live, but they also aren't reminding us every week that they're a taped show. I just thought maybe that would have been better if they did the Spud Swoggle segment without the cage set up and then went to commercial and came back from commercial and the cage is set up or something to that effect. But it just, and again, you know, I get it. It's being a little nitpicky, but it looked out of place to me.
No, I think that's a fair point. I actually didn't even catch that. I think I was jotting down some notes from the Spud attack, so I didn't even notice that. But yeah, that's I mean, playing that back in my mind, that is kind of goofy that they should be going out of their way to make it seem like it's live. And Josh Matthews always yells about that they're trending on Twitter right now. So yeah, to show that is a bit of a error on their part.
All right, well, let's go to a commercial break, and then we'll come back and talk about the main event. Let's talk about the main event after this commercial, and then also talk about some of what they're starting to build this Slammiversary, which is about a month away. It's a month, it's exactly a month from tomorrow. So Andrew and I will be back after the break. We'll talk about the main event, Alberto El Patron and EC3. We'll talk about what's starting to build to Slammiversary and what we could see for some matches at that pay-per-view in about a month. And then we'll take some of your calls at 515-605-9345. Again, the number is 515-605-9345. Remember, hit the number 1, and that'll put you in the caller queue once you're on hold. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast Impact Post Show with Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek. We'll be back in a moment talking more Impact with you.
Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch Livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the Livecast. Thank you.
All right, we are back on the PW Torch Livecast. Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek with you. We're talking Impact Wrestling, the June 1st edition here on June 1st, 2017. We're only about a month away from Slammiversary coming up on July 2nd. But a big part of Slammiversary will be the Impact World Championship match, which after tonight's main event, we now know, will be Bobby Lashley against Alberto El Patron. I am assuming it will unify the GFW and Impact World titles, and that is because Alberto El Patron beat EC3 in a cage match in the main event of this show in about 18 minutes. He retained his GFW World title, or global title, I guess, as they're calling it, and also won EC3's number one contender status for the Impact World title at Slammiversary. Andrew, what were your thoughts on this match? I didn't think that this match was terrible. I like the X Division match better, but overall, I didn't really have any issues with the match itself here. I had some issues, as we talked about earlier, with the booking surrounding the whole reason for the match to take place. But I thought the match itself was pretty good.
Yeah, I thought the match was fine. The booking, of course, brought it down. This should have been built up. There should have been more intensity behind it. I mean, EC3 and James Storm probably deserve a cage more than these two. I guess overall, though, it's a hit. It was good. Impact, you know, has delivered a satisfying main event, probably 5, 6, 7 weeks in a row. So that's good to see. But yeah, it's just the booking around it just kind of brought that down for me. What did you kind of think?
Yeah, I was in the same boat. You know, I thought the match, just a standalone match, the match was pretty good. Booking, the reasoning for it, it was not put together the way I would have liked to see it. And you know, we talked about that opening segment. You know, that's what it all went back to me. Is I think there needed to be a better backstory for why this match took place to begin with. There needed to be more, I don't know what the word is I'm looking for, but there needed to be sort of like a stricter way in which they put the storyline together. It just seems very loose and very flimsy and very fly-by-the-seat-of-their-pants type booking with the way they put this whole thing together. So, yeah, the booking hurt it for me as well, but I thought the match itself was pretty good. There were some memorable spots there. EC3 hit El Patron with a Samoan drop off the top rope when they were up against the cage. El Patron hit a frog splash, which was interesting. He also hit El Patron with a stomp off the top rope. Or actually, no, I think it was off the top. It may have been even up on the cage a little bit, not off the top rope. So some memorable spots in the match, though. And I like the idea of going one-on-one El Patron against Bobby Lashley for the Impact and GFW world titles at Slammiversary. I think that's a good main event. I like that they're going one-on-one. I know we talked last week about, hey, maybe they go with a triple threat, or maybe they do something to get some other people involved because they have so many people positioned towards the top of their title picture right now. But I like the idea of going one-on-one. I think this is going to be the best match that they could put together at this point.
Yeah, I think so too. Of course, there's the whole weirdness of GFW and Impact titles. We've harped on that quite a bit. But yeah, at the end of the day, if they're going to spend a lot of money on El Patron and he's still over with the crowd, then yeah, they should absolutely use him. It's just weird to me, though, that Bobby Lashley hasn't been on much at all, which is, you know, we've also talked about it's fine them showing up every now and then, but he was on tonight, but it was only to, you know, make Impact great again. He needs to get out there and be talking about the challengers and how it doesn't matter who wins the match. He's just going to run right through them. So it just seems weird that they have really, really limited his dates, where he used to be every week, which I think was probably too much. But now it seems they've gone too far in the other direction.
Yeah, I wonder what they're going to do with these India tapings with him, because I know he was over there. I saw, you know, there was something on Twitter where he was in the hotel lobby or something. So he's obviously there. I agree with you that he was probably on the show too much before, and that this is swinging too far in the other direction where he's not on TV, you know, hardly at all. I think there's a better balance. You know, he was wrestling a lot before, and he was defending the title, you know, what felt like every other week at one point. That was too much. But I think there's ways to put him on TV without putting him in the ring so that that match still feels special. You know, you've got to pay to see him wrestle. That's fine with me, but I think there's ways to put him on TV, whether it's color comment. You know, why not put him on color commentary for this steel cage match tonight? Or why not have him cut a promo before the match, like you said, talking about each challenger? Just something to get his face on TV and to get him talking a little bit, I think, would be better. And maybe they do that now with these India tapings, now that the title picture and the match itself seems to be sorted out. You know, maybe they were trying to keep him away from doing that earlier in the storyline because, you know, I'm guessing here, but maybe they didn't know where they were going. You know, maybe they weren't sure where they were going to go, and they didn't want him to necessarily talk about something that wasn't going to happen. Now it seems like they have things set in stone and they know where they're going.
Yeah, it has seemed with him, and now kind of the company in general, just like after these, especially tonight in the strange booking, that it doesn't seem like they have like this great master plan in place. I mean, a few weeks ago, Lashley was on TV, maybe this was a month, but he was on TV and Josh Matthews was really, really, really talking him up. And it seemed like they were going for some sort of alliance there. And then nothing really happened. I think a couple weeks after that, Lashley showed up for a 30-second promo. And then he disappeared again. As much as they can, I think they should push him as their version of Brock Lesnar. You know, nobody's ever going to buy that he's as big or as famous, but he should be the guy, you know, steamrolling guys. People should be talking about him all the time because he really is about the most dominant champion they've ever pushed. Where, you know, Bobby Roode had the title the longest out of anyone. He had it for like 7 months. But during that entire time, he was a chicken heel. He barely won. Whereas Lashley, they've really protected him and just had him just manhandle one opponent after the next. So it's just weird that he's not like this overwhelming, you know, presence, kind of like Lesnar is. You know, when is he going to show up? When is he going to appear and tear somebody apart? So I think they just need to be focusing on him more than they are at the moment.
Where else do you think they go with some of these other Slammiversary matches? I mean, is there anything that you would say you feel comfortable sort of setting in stone that we're definitely going to see?
If they aren't going, I was going to say if they aren't going to do Sanjay. Well, I mean that's on them though. Is they should definitely be leading towards stuff. Low-key should have a match right now. I mean, they gave him the main event a couple weeks ago, and it seems like he's going to fight Sanjay Dutt in India. And like you said, they'll probably change the title. But that if they weren't going to India right now, I would say save that for Slammiversary. That's kind of an intriguing matchup. There's a built-in storyline of him getting hurt. But my fear is they're just going to do another 4, 5, 6-man match. Trevor Lee, I don't think he's been on in a couple weeks, so they'll toss him in somewhere. They're going to toss in Andrew Everett. I'm guessing we'll get BOW and LAX again. I just can't imagine who else would challenge them at this point. And then for the women's match, they haven't done a good job either of building up anyone for Rosemary because she's already, she took down ODB in 3 minutes. And I'm guessing she'll team up with Allie to take on Laurel Van Ness and Sienna, but that's not that appealing. And when it comes to Kongo Kong, he's been featured every week. I can't even imagine. I mean, he's already destroyed Braxton Sutter. So it's a great question, but yeah, they have not done a good job of building this up because they only have 2 pay-per-views a year. Like, this should have been set in stone by this point for sure.
Yeah, I agree. But here we are a month away and there's really only one match that we know is going to happen. And it was just settled tonight. They could have been building these up over a longer period of time. I completely agree with you. I think we'll see, obviously, I think we're going to see James Storm in EC3 in some sort of match. I think it's a guarantee you'll see Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards in some sort of match. And then you get the world title match. So that seems to be 3 of them that you can pretty much bank on. With the way the Grand Championship match ended, I wouldn't be surprised if there was some type of, maybe it's Chris Adonis. Maybe it's Chris Adonis against Moose with Eli Drake in his corner or something like that for that match. I think we could end up seeing Sienna against Rosemary for the women's titles because that could be the unification of the two women's belts, guessing. But it's purely a guess at this point. And then where else they go? I mean, like you said, what happens with Kongo Kong? Does he get on the show? I wouldn't be surprised if Magnus is not on the show. Only because, and I think I mentioned this last week. I either wrote this in the report last week or I mentioned this on the show last week. I don't remember which one. But Magnus's whole storyline right now is that Bruce Pritchard is ruining his career. He ruined his career the last time he was with Impact, and he's ruining his career now. I think they will purposely keep Magnus off of Slammiversary, and then that becomes a storyline coming out of Slammiversary that Bruce Pritchard kept him off the show, and he's trying to sabotage his career. I think that's going to be something they go with. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what it feels like. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's a big name and one of their bigger acquisitions here that they don't put on the show at all. Another one that I thought of tonight that we haven't seen in a while, and the only reason I thought of him is because in one of the shots, I think it was during the LAX match, when they cut to Conan at ringside, you could see his poster hanging up, over Conan's shoulder. So we haven't seen Matt Morgan in what seems like forever. I don't think we've seen him since that GF, I think it was there a GFW World Title Triple Threat at one point with Magnus, El Patron, and Morgan. I think that was a match a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago. And I'm not sure we've seen Matt Morgan since then. So I don't know what's going on there. I don't know if he was on a Josh Barnett type deal and it was only a couple of dates and they're done with Matt Morgan, or if he's going to have something to do with the pay-per-view, but he was a guy that I almost completely forgot about until I saw his poster tonight and really got me thinking, what are they going to do with that guy? Because he hasn't even been on TV for what feels like, 2 or 3 weeks now.
That's a great call. I hadn't even thought about him in weeks, and I was really high on him coming back to the company. They're just making so many weird choices right now. Like when Magnus came back to the company, there should have been a long-term plan in place. Like, I can't imagine when they were negotiating a contract with him, they were like, hey, we're going to bring you in 4 months, it's Slammiversary, you're not going to be on the show, and then you're going to feud with Bruce Pritchard. Like, what is this? and Tyrus, like, why is Tyrus with Bruce Pritchard? Why is EC3 and Magnus having problems with Bruce Pritchard? It just seems like there's no big plan here in place, and it's frustrating to see because they should have been putting out a huge positive step forward towards this pay-per-view because, like, to get fans to drop, $30, $40 for it, that's a huge asking point right now because of the WWE Network. So they needed to just throw everything at it, make this seem like you have to absolutely see it. And so far, they've done a pretty poor job. Of course, they do have 4 weeks left to salvage this, but it's been a bit of a mess so far.
Yeah, I'd agree. And like you said, you know, you've got two opportunities to make some pay-per-view dollars on any given year with their schedule right now. And I'm not sure it's a big moneymaker for them anyway. I don't know how many buys they're getting. I don't think it's much, but money's money. And, you know, they don't have many other revenue streams right now at all. So you would think that they'd be focusing a little bit more on this and building it up maybe with a little more advance than just what seems like it's going to be 4 weeks. Speaking, though, of TNA making money, they did announce that they're going back. They've been announcing for a while that they were going to go back on the road, but they finally released a date tonight. I want to talk a little bit about that briefly after the break, and then Andrew and I will wrap up the show. But they are going back on the road. It'll be August 5th in New York on Staten Island. Andrew and I will talk about TNA or Impact going back on the road, what it could mean for the company going forward, and then we'll wrap up the show. But you're listening to the PW Torch Livecast Impact Post Show here on June 1st, 2017.
Do you love pro wrestling, Torch? Then we've got another show just for you, Ring Rust Radio.
Ring Rust Radio breaks down the hottest topics and news from around the wrestling world, including WWE Raw, SmackDown, and pay-per-views, TNA, Lucha Underground, New Japan, and indie wrestling. Edit in interviews with the biggest names in the industry, like Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Paul Heyman, Kurt Angle, and many more. And Ring Rust Radio has something for everyone.
Check out the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Interact with us on Twitter at Ring Rust Radio and email us at ringrustradio@yahoo.com.
All right, back here on the PW Torch Livecast, Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek with you. We are here every Thursday after Impact goes off the air at 10 p.m. Eastern time. Tomorrow night, it's the primetime edition of the show. Bruce Mitchell will be by with the primetime edition along with Rich Fan here on the PW Torch Livecast. Sunday night, it will be a post-Extreme Rules edition of the PW Torch Livecast. Wade Keller will be by on Monday night with the Raw post show. Wade is back on Tuesday with the SmackDown post-show. Those, of course, right after Raw and SmackDown go off the air. Wade is back on Wednesday with a guest on the Midweek Flagship. On Thursday afternoon, Wade has Interview Thursday. His guest earlier today was just incredible. You can hear that interview at pwtorchlivecast.com. Or, of course, if you subscribe to our shows, you can catch them right there in your podcast feed. Just incredible. A regular guest on Interview Thursday and always has tremendous insight and some really cool stories. So make sure you check that out from earlier today. And then Thursday nights, like I said, right after Impact goes off the air, Andrew and I are back with you talking Impact Wrestling. And on this week's edition of Impact, Andrew, Impact finally announced that they were going back on the road. They have been hinting at this for a while. They finally have a date, though, and that date is going to be August 5th. On Staten Island in New York City. It's a minor league ballpark, home of the Staten Island Yankees, very similar to what GFW, Global Force Wrestling, did. I think it was 2 years ago at this point, where they toured, I think it was like 15 or 20 minor league baseball stadiums. But Impact back on the road on August 5th. Obviously, I feel like this is a good step for them. I think they, at some point, needed to get back on the road. They needed to open up some more revenue streams, obviously. And the New York market, you know, I'm sure they have data on where their show is getting watched most and are going to travel strategically to where their show is popular. But the New York market is big enough that I would think they should be able to draw a decent crowd there. They're not going to sell it out. They're at a baseball stadium. I'm sure we're going to get pictures the night of the show and people are going to go look at how empty it is, blah, blah, blah. But I think they could draw a decent house considering the market and considering that they haven't been on the road for a while. But what were your thoughts on them finally announcing a date? I mean, it sort of seemed like they had been pushing, we're going back on the road for so long without actually announcing anything. I honestly was starting to wonder if it was ever going to happen, especially, I think it was 2 weeks ago now, they took the live event tab of their website. It disappeared. So I remember, I think I tweeted at the time, I was like, hey, you know, they've been pumping live events now for months. They had a live events tab on their website that just said, you know, live events are coming soon. And now that tab is gone. And I just look now, it's still gone. It's still not back on the website yet, but I think it will be here at some point. But what was your reaction when they finally announced the date that they are going to be back on the road?
Yeah, like you, I was surprised. They had kept saying that on air. I was thinking that wasn't going to happen. Because like their last shows had done so bad, and it didn't seem like Global Force Wrestling ever drew that great of crowds either. So, I mean, I'm happy for them. And I am hoping that a lot of people go to it. I am a bit nervous. I've been to dozens of indie shows in my life. I've never been to one at a minor league ballpark, but the pictures I've seen look not so great. There, it doesn't seem like you can get in close. It seems it loses that sense of just atmosphere and closeness. So, and it also, like you said, it can lead to bad photos of just most of the seats being empty. But hopefully it's a sign of things to come. I wish they were like in a hot, cool arena, you know, that was packed and an excited crowd. And maybe there will be a lot of fans there. But I am a little bit nervous as how that's going to play out.
Yeah, you know, I think it's smart in a sense to partner with the minor league baseball teams. I was at a show a couple years ago up here in Lowell, Massachusetts. I'm from the Boston area, so Lowell's about maybe a half an hour from my house. And it wasn't a show. It was an indie show. It was Northeast Wrestling. They run a lot of shows out of New York. They bring in some big names. But they sponsored with Lowell Spinners, which is a single-A affiliate of the Boston Red Sox. They play in about a 4,000 or 5,000-seat stadium over in Lowell. And the building was not full by any stretch. But they partnered with this team. Because of the partnership with the team, they were able to bring in some big names. They had Alberto El Patron, I believe, was on that show. Cody Rhodes was on the show, I believe. Rey Mysterio was on the show. I remember that for sure. In fact, I think the main event was Rey Mysterio against El Patron. But they also had a lot of local indie talent on it as well. But what I remember is, you know, they probably had 1,500 people at the show or maybe even 2,000 people at the show.
Oh,
and
wow.
the reason was is because they had months worth of free advertisement at those games. So that's why I wasn't really surprised when I saw August 5th. You know, looking at Twitter, I saw a couple of people that were like, well, their first show's not till 2 months from now. Yeah, but that's 2 months of Impact Wrestling being plugged at every single Staten Island Yankee game every single night for the next 2 months until that show actually takes place. So I think it's smart that you're doing, and also this show, by the way, that I'm talking about that I went to in Lowell was like middle to end of August. It was the same type of thing. They had been, they announced it, I think, around this time, around Memorial Day, and they hyped it and hyped it and hyped it for months before they actually had the show. And it was because they had almost a full minor league baseball season of advertising, you know, the show and who was going to be there. So I think that's smart. I'm interested, though, if that's their only stop. I don't think it will be. I don't think it will be that for that weekend. August 5th is a Saturday night. But I'd be surprised if they flew everybody. I mean, because they advertised Lashley, El Patron. They advertised a lot of guys. I would be a little surprised if they went with bringing all those guys to the Northeast for one show and one weekend. You know, I feel like that there's another date they're going to announce here at some point. And to be quite honest with you, you know, I wonder if a market like Lowell could be one where they go to. I was at a TNA show at a different venue in Lowell, actually the venue that NXT and Ring of Honor have run recently, where TNA originally had a house show scheduled for there, and they turned it into one of their one and only pay-per-views. This was a number of years ago, probably 2012, maybe, I'm guessing. But they turned it into a one and only pay-per-view, and it did quite well. I mean, they probably had 1,500 people in the building, and this was at a time where they really weren't drawing many people to house shows at all. So we'll see. I would be surprised, though. I would almost expect either, you know, Friday the 4th of August or Sunday the 6th to see another show added somewhere either in New York or New Jersey or somewhere else in the Northeast. Because I'd be a little surprised if they're going to go through all this just for one show.
Yeah, no, that makes sense, and that's interesting to know that they have, you know, months to plan it out and how the shows are drawing. I hope that it works out for them. Impact, you know, as a whole, I think it's been more entertaining than it was in the last era. You know, things are actually happening. So hopefully fans come out to these shows. I just don't know how many passionate fans there are of this product, but maybe just hearing, you know, El Patron and Lashley are going to be in the area, and they'll go to the show and give them another chance, because really, that's what they desperately need. You know, when the ratings are coming in at 300,000, they need these hundreds of thousands of people who left the promotion over the past few years to give them another chance. So hopefully they draw well and put on a really good show.
Yeah, because that's the other thing, too. You know, with some of these guys, they're on indie shows all the time. But, you know, Bobby Lashley, I don't think he's worked many indie shows at all. So this might be the first time in a while that people have had a chance to see a guy like that. And he's much different now than the last time Impact was touring. He's at a different point in his career. He's a different character now than he was then.
Yeah, for sure. You know, out of anyone in professional wrestling, he has to be one of the most rapidly improved over the past probably 5 years, I would say. I never saw much in him when he was in WWE and they gave him a massive push, but he has finally lived up to his potential. And yeah, like you said, he does not do a lot of indie shows. I heard through Impact, he charges a lot of money to go to the shows, so maybe they work something out, and hopefully it brings in some fans to see him.
All right, well, anything else you want to add or plug before we get out of here for this week?
I will plug pwpodcast.com. I help run that site with Wade, and just today we got X-Pac 12360 with Jeff Cobb, that's Montanza. I just got in Steve Austin Unleashed with Brian Kendrick, so that will be up probably later tonight. MLW yesterday, Bruce Pritchard, Something to Wrestle With, and then check back every day. We got quick quotes coming up or full written podcast recaps of all the biggest shows. So check back every day, and we got quite a lot of things coming in.
I will plug my Impact Report, which is on pwtorch.com right now. And then also on Twitter, I'm at Mike McMahon, PW. Andrew Socek is at Andrew Socek. That's where you can find us on social media, and online, of course, at pwpodcast.com and pwtorch.com. But that'll do it for this week's edition of the PW Torch Livecast Impact Post Show. Like I said, Andrew and I will be back with you next week at 10 p.m. Eastern, as soon as Impact Wrestling goes off the air. Before we officially get out of here, though, we want to tell you a little bit about PW Torch VIP. It's the best value in wrestling, I can tell you that. If you're a fan of this show, I am sure you'll be a fan of PW Torch VIP. You get exclusive podcasts with guys like Bruce Mitchell, Todd Martin. Sean Radican has an awesome feature that he's been running weekly now on looking at some WWE stars and their past indie histories, and looking ahead to maybe some of the indie stars now who could be making similar impacts down the road. So a lot of great stuff with PW Torch VIP. You can hear a little bit more about it now as we wrap up this week's show, but thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for tuning in every week to our show and all the shows here on the PW Torch livecast. And Andrew and I will talk to you next Thursday, right after Impact goes off the air.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com. And that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. It takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip.